3. Here on behalf of Ms. Byram is Mr. Cannon. Here on behalf of the state is Mr. Olson. Mr. Cannon, are you ready to proceed with argument?
I am, thank you.
All right, go ahead, please.
Thank you, I apologize. I'm not sure how to address you in this capacity. Is it Justice Holly or Husky for today?
Just judge is fine.
Okay.
I don't wanna go upstairs today.
Okay, thank you. May it please the court. Today we're here to discuss Ms. Audrey Byram's case. We have for our fact pattern, her driving, an anonymous caller calling in to report that she was all over, which was not defined as any specific given, any specific activity. The officer did give, or the reporting party did give an approximate mile marker and license plate. An officer was able to locate the vehicle, but after he was able to locate the vehicle, he was only able to observe two instances of weaving within her own lane over the course of a couple of miles. During that time, Audrey changed lanes without issue. She merged off the freeway without issue, made an additional turn without an issue, and had generally infraction-free driving. The only observation was weaving within her own lane. So the gist of the argument at this point, Your Honor, is that, or judges, is that under State v. Neal, this is not sufficient to provide reasonable or articulable suspicion. Under State v. Neal, we had an instance of somebody weaving but going outside of the lane of travel, or what was then demarcated as a lane of travel and has subsequently been held to be otherwise. It kind of makes reason stare to allow an officer to pull somebody over for lesser conduct, weaving within their lane, when weaving outside of it is not sufficient to pull someone over. And I want to go back here to the specific conduct alleged. Again, the reporting party said that they were all over, or that Ms. Byram was all over. And I've seen people be all over. I think we all have. I remember as a law clerk following a drunk driver who almost smashed into one of the overpass supports, one of the big cement barriers there. And when I called the police there, I made sure to include, here's the make, here's the model, here is what exactly happened. There were specific facts that could be verified by police before somebody could be pulled over. And I think that is lacking here. We don't actually have anything for police to corroborate because of the generalness of the allegation. Moreover, what he did observe was, again, not sufficient for reasonable suspicion all on its own. Even if we look at Alabama v. White, in Alabama v. White, the court there and in subsequent cases called that a close case. And when they went through and analyzed it, they had things such as the direction of travel, the identification of the vehicle, which we have here. But there's one thing that they had that they were able to verify that we do not, and that's the destination. And I think the destination in Alabama v. White is what gave the court the sufficient push to get over from this is a close question and we're not going to find reasonable articulable suspicion to this is a close question and yes, we are going to find reasonable articulable suspicion in this case, even though it is close. And that essentially is my argument, judges. It's that there wasn't a definite fact pattern to be corroborated. And even if it was, there wasn't reasonable articulable suspicion to pull Ms. Byram over at that time. I'm happy to take any questions.
Any questions from the panel? All right, thank you, Mr. Cannon. You can reserve the remainder of your time if you'd like.
Yes, please, thank you.
Mr. Olson, argument on behalf of the state.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court, counsel. The magistrate court and the district court both correctly concluded in this case that the officer had reasonable suspicion to stop Byram for driving under the influence. And there's really three components to that reasonable suspicion. One, the anonymous 911 tip that a vehicle was unable to maintain its lane. Two, the officer's identification of the targeted vehicle by description and by location. And third, the officer's observation that Byram was having a hard time maintaining her lane and twice made sharp turns to stay within her lane. And I don't think there's any dispute here that the vehicle pulled over was the subject of the 911 call. So what we're really looking at here is whether the tip plus the officer's observation equals reasonable suspicion. And the two courts that have applied the relevant law here concluded that it did, and they did so correctly. State v. Neal is obviously the case that Byram relies upon. That case is distinguishable. Neal involved two mere touchings of the line marking the right side of his lane of travel, which was certainly well within the broad range of what can be considered to be a normal driving behavior. We simply had more than that in this case. First of all, nobody's very likely to call 911 on someone whose vehicle briefly touches that fog line once or twice, because like we said, that driving is not outside the broad range of what can be considered normal driving. But in this case, an individual did call 911 for Byram being unable to maintain her lane. And that was the information relayed and the information the officer had, unable. Unable to maintain your lane describes simply a more significant driving pattern than touching a fog line once or twice. And we certainly do have the anonymous aspect of this tip, but the state submits that 911 calls initiated from vehicles are really among the more reliable anonymous tips that we can have. Those tipsters are using the 911 system. They're on the road, so we know the basis of the tip. They're observing the target vehicle in real time. And we know that the 911 tipster here was observing the vehicle because the officer was able to find that subject vehicle immediately afterwards. And of course, society asks people to make these 911 calls when they see suspected DUI driving patterns on the road. So in these ways, this tip was inherently more reliable than a lot of the anonymous tips that are described in White and other cases in the briefing involving anonymous tips, which typically involves unknown drug informants. We don't know where they're calling from. We don't know their motives. We don't know the basis of their knowledge. And that's why we look at those types of tips with such suspicion. And here we have so much more inherent reliability based on the nature that I described. So we have that tip that Byram was unable to maintain her lane, combined with the officer's observation that Byram was having a hard time maintaining her lane, and more specifically, that Byram twice made sharp turns to stay within her lane. And I think the district court correctly analyzed particularly that second observation and disagreed with the way that Byram has characterized this as simply a slight or small driving correction. A slight or a small correction, which is what we had in Neal and which was in the broad range of what can be described as normal driving behavior, is simply different than the sharp turns that were observed in this case. And the district court's analysis about that difference was on point, as was its citation to authority in other jurisdictions that was utilized to clarify those points. Finally, there's really two more aspects of this that supports the court's finding of reasonable suspicion. One, between the tip and the officer's observations, we have something we don't usually have in these cases, which is evidence of a continuous suspicious driving pattern over a period of several minutes, furthering this from Neal. So not only did these add in a separate sense, they accumulate together because we have a driving pattern and about a minute later, a continued driving pattern, which really strengthens the overall suspicion. And two, unlike again, a lot of the tips cases, we didn't just have corroboration of identity. We didn't get information that this color car is going in this direction at this time. We had that, but we also had the continued driving pattern. So the officer was actually able to corroborate the driving, general driving pattern that developed into the suspicion. For these reasons, the anonymous tipster's description that Byram was unable to maintain her lane, combined with the officer's observations that Byram was having a hard time maintaining her lane and twice made sharp turns to stay within her lane, gave the officer reasonable suspicion for the stop. Therefore, the state would respectfully request that this court affirm the district court's intermediate appellate order and Byram's judgment of conviction. And unless there's any other questions, then the state would so request the court. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Mr. Cannon, any reply? Any response?
Yes, Judge, thank you. Counsel talks about this being normal driving behavior and talks about it as being a pattern of we're discussing normal driving behavior and discusses this as though it's a bad driving pattern. As I began with the facts that I laid before this court, I don't know that there's a pattern there so much as individual instances. She was able to merge, as I said before. She was able to make turns. She was able to do a lot of normal driving functions, things that we expect people to do when they're driving a vehicle. So I don't think that amounts to any type of pattern in this case, as there's a lot of good driving behavior that was taking place during that time. Secondly, the individual call to 911, I don't agree with counsel that just calling 911 because you're on the road makes you more reliable than somebody who is calling for other reasons. I don't think that increases the veracity of the caller simply because they happen to be driving at the time. People call 911. We have statutes that are to take care of people making false calls to 911. And that's part of the analysis when we look at the confidential informants is whether or not they are known to officers at the time, because we have ways of recrimination if they are making a false report. If they're not able to be identified, then we don't have that option. We cannot as a society go back and say, whoa, don't do that. I don't think it matters whether you're on the road or off the road as much as it matters, are you known to officers, are you known to dispatch, or are you not known? And in this case, he's not known. And he or she, I should say, is not known. So with that and the lack of a bad driving pattern and more just driving behavior throughout, I believe that the lower courts, both the district and the magistrate, misapplied the law, misapplied Neal and the general principle there, and would ask the court to overturn their rulings and grant the motion for suppression.
Thank you, Mr. Cannon. The court appreciates the briefing and argument in this case. The case is now fully submitted to the court, and an opinion will issue in due course. Court will be in recess until 1:30 this afternoon.
Thank you, judges.